Three, two, one.
There you go.
All right. My favorite part of you taking that call.
Yes.
Was that you spoke into the mic the whole time.
You gotta be kidding.
What the hell are you doing?
You gotta be kidding me. I did?
No, you were, yes. I took the headphones out so I didn't have to hear it. She's finally on mic. I know how to keep her on mic now. I just have to get her the doctor to call her. Oh, I get it. You stay on mic for doctors, just not for unimportant people like me.
No, that's okay. I don't know what I was doing. Oh my God. That's so funny. Okay, well, thanks for being patient with that. I had to take that call.
Yeah, I don't give an F today.
You don't give an F? I don't give an F.
My cat woke me up at 6 a.m.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, the light's streaming in through the window. There's no way I'm getting back to sleep. And I looked over, and I had this new sleeping mask. So I put the sleeping mask on, and I went back to sleep for 2 hours. And wow. I got up and was like, damn, that was nice. So I just don't care.
I should try that. I haven't
slept. You should get some sleep.
Well, look at me.
Well, our viewers can't see you.
Oh,
no. Our listeners can't see you.
Which is a good thing. Today's Friday. I got the puppy on Friday. So it's been a week now with no sleep. This is awesome.
Hang on. We haven't gotten to follow up yet.
Okay.
Oh, Catherine, did you get a dog?
Yes, I unfortunately did.
You know, I keep warning you.
I know. Well, my friend V wanted a little puppy, so they all started looking at puppies, and then Marie got a puppy, and then I was looking at these puppies for V, and then I went and looked at the puppy, and I bought it. And guess who didn't get the puppy of all three of us?
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The smart one.
Exactly. And then she looks at me as she's holding my little dog, and she's like, I know my limitations.
Well, someone does. Maybe she can teach you.
Oh, God. Gotta love her. Yeah, so Marie's got a little doxy, just a beautiful little boy. And I've got this minute of a chihuahua who weighs 1.2 pounds. I bought a bag of coffee that weighed more than this dog the other day.
It's not really a dog.
That's all my follow-up. I'm sleep deprived.
So another part of me not giving an F for today was I didn't finish all my homework.
I didn't either.
I only did the mummies and the decaying masterpieces.
I think that's enough.
Typewriter.
Yeah, the type. We'll do that. I think artist needs like his own show.
I think he deserves more than my cavalier approach to this Friday.
Me too. I mean, you're like, you don't give anything, and I don't got anything.
I feel like a man, you know? It's like, I don't care what you think. Doesn't matter. I'm here to drive my truck through your garden, whatever. I don't care. That's what happens when a man gets sleep.
Oh, God.
I don't have a truck, though. And my Prius would get stuck on your flowers.
It just doesn't read the same way.
Then I have to call a tow truck to get my Prius out of your flower bed.
And that's so manly. Anyway, no, so what else is going on?
Who cares? You know what else I did? All right, so I have a cup of coffee when I woke up at 8.
At 8, wow.
And then I stupidly put my coffee cup in the sink because I was like, oh... Because I usually only have one cup, and then I realized a minute later, I was like, oh, I need that because I'm going to have a second cup for the podcast. And
right,
then
right.
I was like, and I said, screw it. So I picked it up out of the sink, and I used it again. Yeah, once it goes in the sink, it's supposed to be there to be clean. You know, it's not supposed to be messed with until it gets washed. And it's like, yeah, screw it.
Okay, that's not even gross compared to what I've been doing. So
I'm going into the sink, and you can't stop me. Nothing can stop me today.
Okay, that's good. That's good. I have no further follow. I mean, I don't know what else was going on. Not much.
Do the show notes?
Oh, I didn't do the show notes.
Did you listen to it?
I was part of it and I fell asleep.
Okay. Hey, more power to you.
I will get them. I know it was like the 2 minutes of shut-eye I got in a week. I'll get those to you today. I will.
Yeah,
no,
there's no hurry. I was just wondering if there's any follow-up from that.
No, I didn't. I can't ascertain any follow-up.
So, Catherine.
Yes, sir.
I have a very, very serious question for you now.
No.
Have we got Egyptian mummies all wrong?
I don't know.
All wrong? Have we?
I've wondered that my whole life.
I don't think so. We don't know much about them, really, aside from what they look like and how they were embalmed and all that stuff. But we don't really know a lot about the Egyptian culture. It's surprisingly limited because it was like 5,000 years ago, I guess.
I often wonder what the Egyptians actually had to say about it because it seems like other people just went in and snatched the mummies, made up their own stories.
They've been snatching mummies from day one. I mean, most of the mummies are gone because they were stolen by grave robbers. You know, Indiana Jones and his ilk.
I know. Damn Indiana Jones. That's terrible. But no, I think, you know, looking at that, have we got ancient mummies all wrong? I think we probably have always got it all wrong.
Well, I don't know about all wrong, but we don't really know. So we can.
Well, we don't know.
It's only a supposition. But also, let's just, Indiana Jones, by the way, mm-hmm. the first one, Raiders of the Lost Ark, is mm-hmm. a perfect movie.
Is it?
Yeah, I think it is. Have you seen it?
I've seen it a bunch of times.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's exactly. Why would you see it a bunch of times unless it was a perfect movie?
It was kind of a perfect movie. And then it went downhill.
You can just watch it. Oh, the sequels?
Yeah, the last sequel, it was so cringy at the end. I thought it was going to, and I saw it in the theater. I was ready to walk out.
I don't think I even watched the last
one.
I don't know. And there's another, you know, they're making another one.
Oh, geez, Louise, really?
Because, what's his name?
Harrison Ford?
Because Harrison Ford isn't dead quite yet. Almost, but not quite. So, should we back to the mummies or?
Yeah, let's go back to the mummies.
Okay.
So we're discussing,
I got triggered.
You got triggered. Yeah. Have we got ancient mummies all wrong? When you sent me this little piece to review, you wrote dumb.
That was not part of the title.
Excuse me. Okay, go ahead.
That was not part of the title. I did add that myself. Mm-hmm. That was my
commentary. What made you think it was dumb?
Because I read the article and the guy made no useful points. They've taken a mummy exhibit that mm-hmm. used to have a lot of CT scans and science stuff.
Right,
and looking at the people inside the sarcophagi.
Mm-hmm.
And they've taken all that stuff out. Now we're just supposed to look at the superficial surface mm-hmm. of the caskets.
Right.
And because that's what the Egyptians wanted us to see. So we're not supposed to look below the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really dumb. And scientific exploration and historical anthropology, all these things are trying to find as much data as we can in the small remnants of relics that we have.
Right. I always thought it was a little bit, disrespectful to untomb the mummies and unwrap them. It always kind of gave me the heebie-jeebies. And not from a gross perspective, but just from a burial perspective. Yeah, it's like voyeuristic. It's like, of course, they're going to be calcified and possibly moldy or whatever the hell, you know. So there's this argument for unwrapping versus the argument for no unwrapping. But what I was really interested in were these different, like these later day mummies, like the ones, you know, there were certain mummies that had the typical headdress on with the big blue eyes or the big blue eyeliner or whatever. And then the other ones that were...
The Fayum?
Yeah, the Fayans. I kept saying Fayans, but Fayans was developed, they thought, maybe in Egypt in 4000 BC.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Fayans, it was like a way, like we used to... Fayans is like a glaze technique.
Oh.
And they found beads with Fayans, I think, originally in Egypt. Beads, I know. So they're just a kind of a bluish glazed thing. I'm butchering the term. Anyway, I just thought it was kind of Fayum portraits, the portraits. And the portraits look like Roman people.
Well, that's because they were Roman people.
Okay.
Those came later in the 3rd century, so they were in fact Romans. Well, mostly Greeks, but in the Roman Empire because Rome ruled Egypt by that point.
That was something I learned. I mean, I thought that it was, that was quite interesting. The Fayum portraits.
You know, you knew this. You learning about the Fayum portraits or about Rome ruling Egypt?
About the Fayum portraits.
Okay, yeah, because I was going to say, if you forgot that Rome conquered Egypt, you just had forgotten that. Because I'm sure, in your education, at some point, you would have learned that.
No, I did learn that, but they never talked about Fayum portraits. And I thought it was quite interesting.
No, of course not. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, history can be really interesting. You know, we don't zoom into the small things like this.
Right.
I think this is one of, the guy named who's leading this crusade, Price. This guy's name is mm-hmm. Price. This is one of his leading points of evidence to show that we're not supposed to look inside. We're just supposed to look on the outside and figure out how the Egyptians were seeing this. And that's part of you know, looking on the outside, but also part of looking on the inside is understanding why they created it, so we can understand why they, how they would have seen it. But
right.
But these are thousands of years past the point of the early mummies, right?
Yes.
And they're also basically culturally very different because, as we say, they're Greeks in a Roman Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an evolution of the preparation for the dead, which is clearly informed by the ancient Egyptians, which by this point, they are ancient, right? I mean, we are closer to the Fayum paintings, the portraits, than the Fayum are to like early Egypt.
That's a good point.
You know, it's less than 2,000 years from when these portraits were made versus the 3,000 years when Egypt was originally became a culture from these portraits. Whew.
Wow, that was quite a load.
But the article starts off, as most articles do, with really shooting itself in the foot by saying stupid things like, quote, mummies like werewolves, vampires, and witches are stuff of legend. Except that when we're talking about mummies, mummies are actually real.
Thank you. I know.
Who writes this crap? Maybe I should be an editor at the BBC and I should just tell the writers, hey, guys, these are not the same thing here. Okay, yeah, I know mummies have been used in horror films and whatnot, but that's not the kind of mummies we're talking about here.
No.
And those mummies are at least based on something real, as opposed, I don't think there are actual werewolves. I've never met one. Maybe your new dog is a werewolf and you just haven't seen
his new
tiny
dog
little
is
masculine. Right. Or feminine, I don't know. Could be a woman werewolf.
No, it's a boy.
And the vampires. Also, I've not met a lot of vampires.
No.
Goth was a little bit after my day.
Exactly. That was kind of off-putting initially to hear that. And then, you know, because we're talking about human remains. And I guess...
Right. So there's a fine line there, though, right? I mean, you don't go around digging up people who died a couple years ago. That's a crime. But
right.
It's okay. What is the point at which we can start digging up old people? I mean, we pull people out of bogs, and if they've only been there for a few weeks, we bury them. But if they've been there for a few hundred years, we start tearing them apart.
Right. Well, I think that one line said it all. And this is something, I mean, you just want to put this on a T-shirt. The tang of colonial entitlement.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And I think that, well, it really was. I mean, there was no...
No, that's a bunch of crap.
It's not a bunch of crap. It is colonialism.
It's just a way of wrapping wokeism into a worldview of trying to make everything that the British Empire ever did or the Europeans ever did as being downright evil.
I'm not saying it's evil. I'm just saying it was kind of tasteless.
But that was colonial. Yeah, okay. There certainly are tasteless parts of this, you know. The theoretical, which I have not seen documentation of, but the theoretical unwrapping parties of the, what was it, the 19th century or the 20th? No, I guess it was the 19th century. I don't know.
There was a 19th
where
century.
In England, they would take mummies and unwrap them and have parties. The problem is I guess you could do that, but I don't know why you would want to do that. That doesn't seem like a good party favor to me.
The unwrapping of the mummies? Party
right,
favor?
Actually, yeah, that just... I mean, maybe it happened, but if I got that invitation, I'd be like, oh no, thanks. I'm staying home and watching Netflix.
Yeah. It's kind of like the zombie apocalypse birthday party or something,
yeah,
which I threw for a person once.
Oh, of course you did.
Of course I did. And everyone came dressed like zombies.
So I guess the underlying thing that really bothered me about this article is like, it seems like it's stepping away from academic rigor and research and saying, oh, we can't look at that because it's offensive to a culture that's been dead for thousands of years.
Right. Well, I think it is offensive, but...
I don't like the idea of restricting science.
No, point taken. I think that's good. But, you know, and I also don't say... I think there's like two sides of the coin. Like there is a scientific side, but I also don't see... It's just like the premise under which he said you need to just observe the sarcophagus or the paintings, you know,
right.
It's just kind of like, that was the premise. It's like, I see absolutely, I mean, there is a lot of artistic value and I think mummies and some of the
cultural,
it's cultural and it's beautiful. And I see no reason to commingle, you know, CT scans and x-rays of the underlying what's in the box or whatever,
Catherine,
what?
One of my other main points is we can do both. We can examine and enjoy the outside as well as exploring the inside. I can do both, and I do both.
Right.
It's just a natural part of the process. It's as an anthropologic study, you mm-hmm. look at the outside, and then you go as deep as you can on the inside mm-hmm. to understand how to put these things into context. Without mm-hmm. that, without understanding what's going on inside, I think it's a lot harder to put the outside into context. Yeah. They just look like pinatas otherwise. I mean, who knows what's inside there? Is it candies? God.
No, it's far from it. Well, there is an anthropological point to it. And I think it's also like some morbid fascination with death and then the death rituals. And so I thought, you know, that if this planet survives or whatever, and then people start digging up like all the coffins, it's like, what stories are they going to make up about that? Oh, they were putting them here so they could travel to another. I mean, you can always make up shit.
Yeah, well, making up shit is good.
Yeah.
As far as if the world is going to continue, I don't know if this will help or hurt mm-hmm. your mental health today, but and I don't remember who did it, but there's a recent scientist did an analysis of all the different things that could destroy humanity. Not the Earth, obviously, but humanity. Mm-hmm. And he says we are now at a precipice right now. Our modern era starting since the atomic bomb was invented.
Right.
We're in what he considers as the precipice period, in which our chances of survival are as low as they've ever been as a race.
I would agree with that.
And he says, right now, this century and the next couple of centuries, if things continue as they are, we have a 1 in 6 chance of destroying ourselves. Mm-hmm. And he points out, you can't do that for very many centuries before eventually, you know, you hit the 1 in 6 odds and you destroy yourselves. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that makes you feel.
Oh, that's great. That was fantastic. No, I get that. And am I okay with it?
So we're not all going to be mummies. Or more likely, we'll all be those outlines on the wall, you know, after we've been atomized by the atomic bombs.
Oh, like Shrouds of Turin?
Well, no, but there was, I think it's in Pompeii, where the blast was so fierce that there are a couple of people who got, like, instantly incinerated, and the outline, their outline is projected onto a nearby wall.
Oh, wow.
Think about that. Yeah, like that?
Yeah, I just did think about that. That's kind of...
So what you want to do is you want to start by making a really solid wall that's not going to get blown down. You got to make a really solid... Okay, good. There you go. None of this 2x4s and drywall stuff. That's not going to cut it. You need some actual stone. You need some stonework.
Yeah, I live in a brick house. Like little pigs.
Well, the brick houses that we have today, mine is 1926, so I actually have, my brick is actually structural. But modern brick houses, they're not structural. That's just a veneer. That's one layer of brick that's on top of the wood. So you can push that down with your hand.
Oh, no, this is brick.
When was your house built? In the 70s?
69, 70.
Yeah, it's probably a veneer.
But there are actual bricks.
I know, but I'm saying even if you have one layer of bricks. You mean there's wood under it? Yeah. The structurally, it's not structurally relevant. It's the brick veneer. One layer of brick is just a veneer, because you need more than one layer of brick to actually build a house that will stand more than a few feet high.
Oh my God! You know,
ours is 3 layers of brick, I think.
Yeah, those houses are thick. I know.
Well, they're thick brick because that's how that's the structural integrity of the house is mm-hmm. the brick. The brick outer wall is 3 layers of brick. Maybe 4. I don't remember. I'll tear my house down and let you know.
Okay, yeah, tear it down and do some forensic analysis.
Another quote this guy says is, from the inside, what we expect to have the right to see, on the outside, what the ancient Egyptians expected people to see. And what that's getting at is the idea of, you know, we're prying into seeing things, into things that we're not meant to see by opening up the tombs. And except that these, especially the early part of this, all these artifacts were in the tomb. Mm-hmm. They were not meant for display. No one was supposed to see this. So it's really not any less voyeuristic to even just look at the sarcophagi than to see what's inside the sarcophagi. Because none of this stuff was designed for presentation in a museum.
Right. And the way he was talking, it's like, oh, they were standing up and they'd view them. I'm like, who's going to view them when they sealed the stuff? It was just crazy. No, I had the same thought.
Well, that's his guess. He has no data to support that position. And also, he's talking about, you know, he's jumping from thousands of years back and forth like it's 2 days worth of history. Right. You know, about the Fame portraits, okay, maybe they put them up in public. I don't know. Maybe there was kind of a mausoleum thing, but we don't have any data to support that. So that's just a wild supposition on his part.
Did they find the Fame
portraits?
I don't
like this guy.
Did they find the Fame portraits in tombs? Or they entombed? And
they
dug
were on sarcophaguses, small ones, like coffins, more like coffins.
Right, right. Yeah, that's what I got. But so they still had to open something up to get to it, so it wasn't meant for viewing even then.
So the Fayan the Fayans portraits were of more, not rank and file, but much more common. Mm-hmm. At that point, you know, it had filtered down, trickle down, not economics, but death burial things. You know, it's like the a few thousand years ago, this is the purview of just the rulers and the elites.
Mm-hmm.
But after a few thousand years of trickle down death practices, the A-list celebrities could, mm-hmm. you know, if you had enough money, you could do this kind of stuff. And again, it was the Greeks who were in Egypt, which was a small minority of the mm-hmm. Egyptians who were practicing this.
Right. Crazy. I don't think any of it was meant to be viewed. I think it was a way to pay homage to the people who died and to memorialize them in some way.
It's
you
just
know.
Crazy religious stuff. They thought they were going to be reborn and live forever, and that's why
did they? I mean, where's the, you know, that I thought that was a theory too. Or they were going to transmute themselves into, is that a word, transmute? Into gods. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, we're getting them ready for their godlike state. Is that really proven?
All the evidence points in that direction.
It really does?
Well, yeah.
Maybe they were gods. Maybe they were ancient aliens.
Yeah, we completely destroyed their afterlife. They were having a great time down there until we got in there and started taking all their stuff out.
I know, right? Damn it.
There are so many TV shows and movies and stuff about the angry mummy who comes back alive and kills everybody who, you know, desecrated their tomb. And I understand that. You know, if you messed up their afterlife, I would come after you.
Right.
Anyway. One last nail in the coffin.
No pun intended.
Of course it was intended.
Okay.
Price is talking about the Fayum portraits, and he's trying to use, jumping across centuries, trying to use the same kind of terminology where he thinks, well, if you look at the portraits, they're clearly godlike portraits. It's more about the transmutation into a god rather than, you know, continuing the body into an afterlife. If you Google Fayum portrait, what you see is a bunch of Instagram influencers, personal pictures. That's what I got from it, because they're beautiful. They don't look like gods to me. They just look like nice Instagram portraits of people.
Wow.
And trying to say that they're godlike is just completely crazy. This guy is off his rocker, or I don't know. He's got his agenda, and he's pushing his agenda without data. Dogma over data. Good job.
I don't know. Not a big fan of mummies, but I would probably go to the exhibit if it was just, you know, why does everything have to have a point? It's like, here we dug up some stuff that we shouldn't have dug up, and it's kind of pretty, and it has a nice backstory, multiple times over. You can make up your own story if you want. And just look at the artwork. Just look at the picture. Pretty pictures, pretty colors. You know, I don't need to back it up. I don't need to have some agenda.
Okay.
You know?
If you want to be superficial, that's fine.
I just want to be superficial because I have
but
no sleep.
I like understanding a little bit more about, like, understanding the people behind it, what they would have eating, what had they died, what they would have been doing during their life, because it makes a connection across the centuries and humanizes them.
Yeah, no, I was just talking in terms of this exhibit. I'm not disagreeing with you. But, like, if you're going to do this, why do you have to have a whole dissertation about how this unfolded and take away all of the science? That's what I'm saying. I think we're saying the same thing different ways. So would you say this is a decaying masterpiece? Or
I would say this is a decaying conversation. And we should talk about something else in decay.
Okay.
Like the Western sense of art.
Yes.
Another BBC article. Inherent vice. What to do with decaying masterpieces. Mm-hmm. What do they mean by vice here? I don't understand their usage of this term.
Inherent
they use it over
vice?
And over again.
Well, yeah. Inherent vice is it just means like an inherent fault. It's like something that's built in, whereby whatever the object or the materials or whatever just has like a path to decay. Kind of like.
So are you saying Miami Vice is about the decay of Miami?
No, I don't know. No. No, but inherent vice, there is a term, inherent vice.
Okay.
And it's something like this. Like you're talking about the house, like, you know, like a poor quality.
I'm sorry for trying to make a joke.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Well, I think it was about the decay of Miami. Yes, it was. The fashion alone, like, well, just.
Excuse me?
The Miami Vice fashion.
Did you have a problem with the Miami Vice fashion?
I had a problem with rolling up your shirt sleeves like they did on the jackets. I thought that was so crazy.
Okay, it was a suit sleeve, and it was a linen suit sleeve, and he was rocking that like a baller.
Oh, jeez Louise.
Excuse me. I mean, there's not much about Miami Vice that I like, but the style is not something you can criticize.
Oh, I just couldn't stand the jacket thing.
A linen suit. He's in Miami. You got to understand, it's like 115
degrees. Then don't wear a jacket. Wear a Hawaiian shirt.
But you got to keep the sun off.
Oh, God. But then he didn't keep
it. This isn't Magnum P.I. You don't have the breeze like you have in Miami.
How is he keeping the sun off if he rolled his sleeves up? It doesn't make sense. That's inherent vice. That's Miami Vice.
Okay. Part of fashion is not making sense. Okay. So you got Don Johnson. You got, what's his
name? Don
Johnson. Crockett.
Yeah.
Right. Rocking his linen suits.
Right.
His crumpled linen suits with the bright T-shirt underneath. Amazing. Perfect. And then you got his partner Tubbs in a three-piece suit, perfectly manicured.
Mm-hmm.
These guys shouldn't have been bothering with police work. They should—I don't know what they should have been doing, but they, you know, just get out there and let everybody
look at you,
experience your beauty.
Mm-hmm.
God, that was a good-looking show. It was a terrible show, but it was a good-looking show.
I just couldn't get past the sleeves. But anyway,
and Castillo, the lieutenant with his tiny little skinny black tie. Oh my God!
You know way more about this than I ever thought you would.
I was alive during the 80s, and I had a heartbeat.
And I, me too, but yeah, I couldn't get past the shirt. Anyway, so inherent vice has to do with just like a natural portion of decay, like the human body, I guess you could say is a good example to connect it to. But anyway, you know, my question about this, you know, what to do with
Stop saying, but anyway. Do you know how many times I have to cut out you saying, but anyway,
okay,
during my editing process?
I'm
gonna charge you $5 every time I have to edit that out.
Oh, no, you're not. Okay. My question, my overriding question to this whole scenario that was depicted in this BBC article.
Should we just, before we give you your whole scenario, or do you just sum up the article quickly?
Go ahead, sum up the article.
It's about modern works from the modern period starting around 1920s. Mm-hmm. Modern works, it's not really talking about old works. It's really talking about the modern works. They decay.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them decay very quickly. Mm-hmm. And the curators are driven mad by trying to keep these things in one piece. Or what do they do with a work that was made maybe 5 or 10 years ago, which is decaying? Do they keep it? Do they throw it out? What happens to these
mm-hmm.
things? You know, a lot of times you're talking about pieces that are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what
so
do you do? Yeah, that was the gist of the article. And I thought it was interesting that they talked about...
So what would you do, Catherine?
What would I do?
Yes.
I would answer one question prior to delving deeper. My question is, like, why do all bad ideas lead to Damien Hirst?
Well, they eventually wind up on Damien Hirst. They don't start with Damien Hirst because he doesn't start anything. Oh. He just reuses crap.
Right.
Crap in, crap out.
Crap in, crap out. I thought it was interesting when they talked about... Nam Gabo, and he was using plastics back in the 30s, which was really different kind of plastic. It was much more friable and didn't last over time, right?
Well, some plastic is like that today.
Yeah.
It depends on how you make
it.
Yeah,
some of it is. But this, I kept thinking Bakelite and then that other, they didn't really talk about what it was. He used it and then these things just fell apart.
He was experimenting with the new material.
With the new material.
And
no one knew how it would hold up. And I thought that was actually kind of interesting.
Which is common for artists to do, but no one had any idea what it'd be like. So it turned out that they were very volatile mm-hmm. plastics, which mm-hmm. broke down very quickly.
Right. I wish all of it was like that now. They would just go away. Now the two cones are lying in fragments. And then I started thinking, does all art need to be preserved?
You're asking me that question?
Yeah, because I think I know your answer.
I've answered it 1,000 times on this show.
I know. Say it again.
Art is not permanent. Art will be eventually fail, and we should throw it out mm-hmm. when it becomes no longer useful to us.
Mm-hmm. They did give a nod to the old masters in terms of discoloration of the pigments and...
I don't remember that. But yeah, that is a different curatorial process, and one that's a lot easier to execute on, because generally you just have to peel off the shellac that's on top of it and mm-hmm. then recoat it. Sometimes you have to do some more work, like on the Sistine Chapel, For some reason, they painstakingly scraped off like every bit of pigment, cleaned it, and then put it back up. I'm okay if you want to have something to do for 20 years. I guess that could be a fun project, but I don't know. That just seemed a little
But isn't
extreme.
That just recreating the work? Doesn't that destroy the original work?
In some ways it does, but literally they were picking off little pieces of pigment, like grains of sand, and then they were putting them right back after they cleaned them. So it was theoretically reconstructing it, but you know, it seemed like they didn't lose any of the original intent because again they were working on such a small scale.
That's a project I wouldn't want to tackle.
Oh God, no. No, I would give up after like a day.
Right.
And I think it took 20 years to clean the whole thing because they were, I mean, it seems like there are better uses of your time, but whatever.
It seems like it. So I don't know. So to, you know, decaying masterpieces, I say kind of let it go and like stop using animals and dead things in your artwork.
Or lard or chocolate.
Lard chocolate. I mean, that is just disgusting. What is that?
Well, it's
a stuffed ghost?
It's the artist telling the world, I don't give an F. I don't care.
Right.
They're trying to be edgy, right, and experimental. Mm-hmm. And one of the really main basic takeaways from this article was that there wasn't a goddamn single piece of, quote, artwork in here that was worth saving.
Thank you.
A pile of lard and chocolate sculpted by the artist's teeth. Let that one sink. Oh, so I'm eating lard and I'm discarding the rest. And that is what we call art now.
I know, I was just like,
okay, but
honest to God.
But I will say this for that one particular piece, if you're going to make a work that literally decays in front of you, it was designed to decay in front of you. She made a mold of it so that you could recreate it every time. That part is I think valid and useful. What she made for that process was the cleaning crew can come in and take care of that, I think is my point.
Right. But this is where it just gets so wacky. Years ago, when I was still living in Tempe, a friend of mine was dating one of the artists who was in their program. And for their graduation thing, whatever, in this master's program, MFA program, they had their little art show. And so we went there. It was called the Vague Art Show. And it was some of the most horrible shit I've ever seen, including, and it, the image sticks with me today, there was a dead bird that they had eviscerated and then filled the bird cavity with like baubles and beads, like recycled charms and whatever. I don't even know where they got this shit. It was just pouring out of the bird's cavity.
You sure you went to an art school, not an insane asylum?
I didn't go to an art. I was in nursing school.
And no, I'm
this
saying
was like the MFA program.
Right, the MFA. The art, you went to the art school to see their exhibit.
Right, it was
so,
at ASU.
So are you sure you went to the art school? Or the insane asylum? Was this?
Well, I think it was very disturbing. The entire exhibit was like that piece sticks out, as do a couple other like photography pieces that were like stop, you know, like the stop frame photography of like weird naked people dancing in a shower. And, you know, just it was just black and white images and this weird music. And I mean, I just had to get out of there. And it was just, but that bird, and that was years ago.
Well,
I mean, why do people do this? How is that art?
They can't figure out anything better. They're just trying to be provocative because they don't really understand art. I've said this before.
I don't know
if you know this, Catherine. I went to the Rhode Island School of Design.
I've heard that.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you know that.
I've heard that in passing.
I was going to study painting, but and at the end of my freshman year, I went to the senior painting exhibit put on by the senior painters that year. And was so disgusted by the, quote, work on display. Every single thing there was terrible. I walked directly over to the industrial design office and switched my majors on the spot.
I love that story. And that's, if I was contemplating going to an art program, I would have probably switched my major to.
I am lucky that
I don't know
that I went to that college. I would have probably wound up at RISD or at Carnegie Mellon, and I think either one would have worked for me because both of them had industrial design departments.
Okay.
But I'm glad I didn't wind up at Cornell or what was the other one? I played to one other college. I can't remember what it was because they only had the art schools.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't know what kind of useless fop I would have been if I had wound up studying painting.
Right. Well, when it, you know, when I read this article and I saw all of these animals being used as quote unquote art, you know, the crumbling, you know,
shark
and all of this weird stuff, I immediately went back to that. The fact that it has stuck with me for over 20 years, probably, I don't know what it means other than I was so darn disgusted with it. And the whole show just seemed like a big middle finger to the ASU's program.
Well, it wasn't so much that. It was just a middle finger to their own creativity because they lacked it so much. You know, it,
oh,
it was,
maybe, yeah. And the vague art show.
Just to come back to Damien Hirst, because there's a whole paragraph that I want to read to you from the article.
Go for it.
And this is about the shark. Mm-hmm. Quote, his first attempt to salvage the work involved skinning the shark, tanning its hide, then draping it around a shark-shaped fiberglass frame. Unfortunately, yes. This made an object intended to evoke metaphysical dread look more like a cheap prop at a Jaws convention. Eventually, Hirst remade the sculpture from scratch with a fresh shark plus expert input from preservation experts at London's Natural History Museum. End quote. If that's not a condemnation of him as an artist, I don't know what is. I mean, he doesn't know anything about his craft. Also, mm-hmm. throwing the movie Jaws under the bus like this,
I know, right?
Is bullshit, because the Jaws in the movie was amazing. It was lauded at the time and still is perceived as one of the best executed props of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So, shut up, whoever's writing this article. You don't know what you're talking about. Have you seen the movie Jaws? Or, oh, there's also, oh my God, this is even better.
What?
I'll send you a link to this.
Okay.
Maybe we'll talk about this next week, but there is a music video about Jaws.
Oh, okay.
It is a thing of wonder and beauty, and I love it. I will send it to you.
Okay.
Anyway, Mulway, that really took me to a different place, because I was kind of getting wound up in all this negativity of this article, and then I remember this beautiful piece of artwork from the Jaws musical, essentially. Jaws as a musical. Oh, yeah.
Jaws the musical?
Jaws the musical.
Fantastic.
Anyway, so to wrap up.
Yeah, I don't think this is art. I think that it should all just.
There was
go
one,
away.
I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name. Tinguely, because that sounds.
Okay.
So this one artist had said long ago in a 1988 interview about his works, Tinguely, quote, Tinguely, unruffled, as he explained in his 1984 interview, quote, this is a quote within a quote, my works are not intended for eternity. They'll wear themselves out and land back in the garbage heap whence they came, end quote, end quote. I thought it was great, because he was doing mobiles and things that moved around. It's like, yeah, they're ground themselves in the dust and just, you know, put them back in the trash heap when you're done.
Agree.
Maybe we should make artwork like that. It's like, return to sender when done, or i.e. return to trash pile when done, when complete.
As long as they recycle it properly, because we don't need any more microplastics.
Well, you know, only 5% of plastics get recycled, even stuff that goes into the recycling bin.
It's terrible. It's a terrible thing. Well, yeah, I think most of this stuff should end up in the trash heap. But I can't say the same about other things. But I also don't think they should, excuse me, go to great lengths to clean like specks of paint and reapply it. Some things just have a, you know, everything has a life cycle on this planet. So let it go.